Good Monday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. July's 28 days old, 2025. It was hot and sweaty out at Commanders training camp. I am happy to be back in the air conditioning with my pal Danny Ruye, who is back, speaking of the sun, from the beach. What's up, dude?
Hey, buddy. Got a little color. Nice little three-day weekend down there at the Outer Banks. Appreciate everybody for accommodating that. It was cool. My kids were, legitimately happy to see me, which doesn't really happen. Usually it's like I'm the bearer of bad news. Like, it's time for going to bed, time for brushing your teeth, time to go to school. This was cool. I got there late Thursday night, woke up Friday morning. They came running in. They couldn't believe I was there. And we had a great old time for 72 hours. It was great.
How much toe in the sand time did you get as opposed to running around doing activities?
A lot. More than you would have thought.
That's your move, honestly. Normal.
That's my thing, man. Yeah, just I'm basically living between times where I can do that. That's what this is. I like doing the show, all that kind of stuff. I like, going to work and the Little League games and playing and their soccer things and trying to stay in shape. I'm living between times where I can be on the beach just in front of the ocean. That's my favorite.
Well, normally, you would go down for a week or something like that. And so there's plenty of time to do everything. Because you're only there for a weekend, I was figuring you got to do extra kid stuff. Yeah. You got to make sure you're with them. Maybe you got to take care of the baby so the wife gets a day. So I figured you go down there, you might actually not get a whole lot of beach time. It sounds like you did.
We did. Yeah, everybody made it happen. They were very gracious because it was like, hey, this is his favorite thing, and he only gets a couple days up. It was awesome. And my kids are water boys. They love going in and, fighting the ocean and kung fu and waves and riding stuff in. It was awesome, dude.
Bobby Boucher.
Yeah.
Josh Connerly, rookie offensive tackle drafted in the first round out of Oregon, is going to be on the show with us at 3:30 today here on Grant and Danny. Caught up with him after practice today. Good conversation with him. And I really thoroughly enjoyed getting to talk to Dietrich Wise, the former New England Patriots defensive end. You'll hear from Wise at 6 o'clock today on The Fan. In that interview, right after practice, catching up with him, he refers to Bill Belichick as Darth Vader, which I found pretty funny.
That's pretty good.
He's, and you could just tell he is fired up to be out in New England. And I don't mean he was throwing shade or anything like that. That's not the case. He was there when they were good, and then he was there after that when they weren't good. But that Patriot way wears on players. There's only so much you can deal with in terms of this is how we do it here. We're going to do it differently than everybody else. You're not going to really be a personality. We don't want anyone doing anything on social media. And I think he's just breath of fresh air, new organization, happy to be out of New England and away from the man he affectionately referred to as Darth Vader.
That's pretty funny.
But make sure you're listening. Connerly, 3:30, Dietrich Wise at 6. We will have a lot to cover today. We're going to talk Mackenzie Gore as a trade chip for the Nationals at 4:30. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is Thursday this week. Got some thoughts on Gore as a possible trade candidate for the Nationals. And then a lot of Commanders today. Santana Moss going to the Ring of Fame. Well-deserved. Terry McLaurin back at practice. We'll start the show there in just a moment. I do have to say I was pumped to be in Ashburn on Sunday. Man, these days are long because it feels like it was a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it was just yesterday when we found out that Santana Moss was going to be named to the team's Ring of Fame and got to right away. He was walking down the sideline and dap him up and say hello and post a video of his reaction. But Danny, I'll tell you, there's an entire era and generation of fans, if you are in your mid-20s, maybe 27, 28 or younger, where Santana Moss might be the best player for a several-year span that you saw on this football team, and they weren't winning championships, and they weren't winning playoff games, and it was lean times. But guys like Tana wearing 89, helping you beat the Dallas Cowboys in dramatic fashion several times, really did make it all worthwhile.
Yeah, wasn't much winning during that time. I think two winning seasons when he was their leading receiver over the course of 6 or 7 years. So this era, now that we're kind of post that from, 10, 15 years kind of on, is going to start to get looked at with a bit more romanticism. We're not going to remember how frustrating and awful and irritating it was and how bad the quarterback play was and, all the this 5-11 season or this 4-12 season or this 6-10 group, et cetera. And some of those guys, as you mentioned, the Chris Samuels is, the Chris Cooley's, the Santana Mosses, will be looked upon favorably. Now, Moss deserves it. I mean, you look at the all-time rankings in terms of team history, he's in that pantheon. The other guys, it's a tougher sell maybe for some of the older folks who are going, I can't remember everybody who's in the Ring of Fame, so I apologize if I'm saying someone that's already been there. But you're going, wait a minute, you're going to put him in instead of Wilbur Marshall or Dave Butts or one of these guys, or instead of Jim Lachey or Mark May? So it's going to be interesting. I'm not talking about retired numbers just yet, but we're starting to get now far enough away where guys from that era are going to get be honored and brought back out a little bit as kind of part of this tradition. It's not the same as it was when it was incredible, but there were some pretty good moments in there, and he was responsible for some.
You're going to be hard-pressed, though, to find players that served as a pillar holding this thing up.
Yeah.
Sturdier than Moss did. Mm-hmm. He's one of my favorite guys I ever covered, too, because he was 100% authentic. He was always very pleasant, like a really kind, decent, good person, but always told you exactly how he felt. And he had a way of being honest, not necessarily negative, but occasionally, if that's what was warranted, without ever being mean, you know, without ever coming off in a way that was unlikable. Like, his authenticity to me is extremely likable. I've always loved him. But that 2005 season when he was 26 years old, which would have been, I guess, his first year in Washington under Joe Gibbs, and it was 2 weeks in when he beat the Dallas Cowboys with the two touchdowns with 4 minutes to go on Monday Night Football with them getting blanked. That year, he ended up going for 1,483 yards. He averaged almost 18 yards per catch, had an 84-catch year with 9 touchdowns. And that was an unbelievable season. You know, Terry McLaurin's been in the news, and he's back at camp, and he wants a contract being paid as one of the best wide receivers in football. McLaurin's never had a season like that. Not to say that he's incapable of doing it, but 84 grabs at 17.5 per for about 1,500 yards and double-digit touchdowns.
And you got to remember that offense, too, was a slog.
Oh, it was
most of the time, it was just chip away, you know, like
run, pass on 3rd and 6.
And for the first 8-9 weeks of the year, if you remember, they're the entire, like, would you like a big play? It's probably going 89. You know, there wasn't much else there. It was
Brunell had to crow hop into throws. I mean, he had nothing left in his left arm. And Moss, a lot of those big plays, if you want to go back, I'll bet you it's a bubble screen where he makes a couple people miss, or a little crosser, like one of those, you know, drag routes where you see Debo Samuel operating now. It's a lot of that kind of stuff around the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Occasional deep shot.
Yeah, those deep balls. He looked like a javelin thrower. Right. I mean, like 18 steps, crow hop, et cetera.
He had some great seasons, though. Had a 93-catch year for 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns, much older into his 30s in Washington in 2010 when he got to play under Kyle and Mike Shanahan, who he had a lot of fun working with. But congratulations to Santana Moss. Very, very fired up for him. Speaking of receivers, though, let's get to McLaurin. He showed up yesterday. I think the way this got reported on initially was flawed, and the way this has been talked about largely has been off. So the idea that the holdout is over is true and accurate in that a hold-in has begun. But the way it is being reported, the way I see it written about by some people, is essentially Terry McLaurin's not holding out anymore. He's at the facility rehabbing, and he's got this foot and ankle problem. Okay, I guess, if you really just want to take everyone at their word. Here is what is happening. Terry McLaurin got tired of being fined $50,000 a day.
Mm-hmm.
He is not going to keep getting fined $50,000 a day. We talked about this last week, and as I said, he's not going to get fined $811,000 when he misses preseason games. That is not a smart business decision. So he decided to do what I thought he was going to do to begin with, which made a lot more sense to me anyway and to a lot of people, and to just do the more traditional, in this CBA era, hold in. And so that is exactly what he's doing. So he has not come out as a distraction during practice, which I give him credit for. I'm assuming that's part of the deal that was struck. Everybody kind of trying to work together a little bit on this thing to say, hey, let's have some goodwill. My guess is they don't want him down on the sideline watching practice because fans are going to be yelling. And maybe if it's not an open day, both of the days he's been there, there have been fans. Maybe tomorrow when it's just the media, or in a couple days when it's just the media, maybe he's allowed to come out. But he has come out and talked to his agent. They've walked side by side in front of all the cameras. They have signed a bunch of autographs after practice. And they chant his name, and he has signed for a total of an hour over the last 2 days for every kid in a certain section of training camp. So he's reported, and he is there. He's a bigger distraction now to the team, for sure, than he was before he came back. So we could have the conversation is, you know, what's better for the club? Probably him holding out. What's better for McLaurin, just because it's $50,000 a day? Probably him holding in. But this does not mean progress is being made on the contract. In fact, I've heard otherwise. It's very much a stalemate still. This is extremely simple to me, Danny. This was just the move for him to stop getting fined.
Yeah.
And so he's there now. He's boys with the team. You know, he's buddies with all the players. He enjoys the fans. So he's doing everything other than practicing, and he's still at odds with the front office over the contract. Nothing's changed other than him showing up, and so they can't keep taking money out of his checking account.
Yeah, the thing I've talked about all throughout this process is, from the team's perspective, the way the CBA is written, the way the agreement is, they've got a lot of leverage here. They are sort of exercising those rights, right? They are playing hardball because they can, and there's only so many recourses a player has. Well, this is McLaurin's version of that. This is his recourse, right? Where you can hold out and get fined a bunch, or you can still kind of make your point while being there. And it's, you know, the longer this goes, the more distracting or destructive or detrimental it is for everybody involved. But this is him playing the same game that the team is playing. So again, no faulting anybody just yet, but I think you've said it very well. It's as much a PR move as anything. Like, you can't tell me it's not purposeful, rather, is the word I'm looking for, that he and his agent are having these heart-to-hearts on the field. Can everyone see everyone's face? Can we get everybody's camera to clack away to let everyone know when it's time for me and my agent to talk? It's all very purposeful. And it's a, you know, continuation of that PR strategy of public pressure, getting everybody yelling Terry, going to Eastern Motors where your job is your credit to give a press conference where you're cutting promos for 45 minutes about how great you are. It's kind of an extension of that. There's only so many levers they can pull, and this is one.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a media circus and a dog and pony show, and that's good for business for him.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the team is trying to avoid, essentially. And by the way, for the couple of days when he was actually holding out and he was not at the team facility, the story was going away. Not to say that it would stay away, because every few days you're still going to ask about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were much better able to control it because it's only Dan Quinn speaking. And Dan Quinn has this way where when he's asked about it, he says, yeah, I'll tell you when I have an update. There's no update. What else are you going to do? Just hold him over the coals?
Mm-hmm.
So by Terry McLaurin being there, now he goes down to sign autographs. He comes back up. There is the ability to kind of walk alongside him and ask him some questions. And each of the last couple of days, we have done that. I had to work on my back pedal today. The quads were barking a little bit, coming uphill, backwards, trying to keep up with Terry McLaurin.
We don't need to talk.
We're just taking it day by day.
Being here in the building, though, how does that improve the dialogue?
Just taking it day by day. Are you going to be able to practice at some point, or how far away from being healthy are you? Just taking it day by day.
Thanks.
It sounds to me like he might be taking it day by day.
Is it a day by day situation?
But this is where we are. It's Brian Fontana Panda Watch. I will acknowledge that right now, he and his agent are winning in the court of public opinion. And I think they're whooping butt. The player's generally going to. So they started with a 25-point lead probably. But by him showing up, by him signing autographs, I'm standing next to him the last couple days as kids are all saying, they need to pay you. Have they paid you yet? And he's like, not yet. And everyone's telling him he's the man and how great he is. In the court of public opinion, he is absolutely winning. Now, the Commanders don't care a ton about that. And when you go toe-to-toe with the choice they've made here, when you decide to make a bet that is getting into a very public dispute over a few million dollars with the face of your franchise and the most popular player on the team, this is what you invite. And you've got to deal with it.
Yeah, there's inevitability to that part of it. You're right. In the sense that where, if you're going to play hardball, which is well within your rights to do, and I'd frankly rather you do that than just overpay everybody. I know the disagreement here that anybody could have is, well, this isn't just anybody. This is this guy. Please treat him special.
This is the guy.
Yeah. But if you're going to do that, then you understand that that doesn't just happen quietly. That's not happening in a vacuum. Like, their teams are going through this. There are guys, I'm trying to remember the player for Detroit, the linebacker, who's asking for a new contract, is practicing, but it's a circus around there, and it's going on, knowing that if you're going to play hardball and it lingers, everyone's getting asked about it every day, public pressure is going to be there every day, you eyes wide open on that. You're not a babe in the woods if you're Adam Peters or Brandon Sosna or Newmark and company. You knew this kind of going in. It's almost, you know, from their perspective, talking about McLaurin and his agent, how much of this can you take? How bothered are you going to get before anything changes on your end?
Well, he's got two levers to pull, basically. One is the holdout. The others demand a trade. And they have had no interest yet in demanding a trade, which I've been talking about is surprising to me. Everybody takes great offense to that. They get in their fan feathers or whatever, and they get really annoyed and get angry at me. I'm not suggesting that Washington should trade him or that Terry should want to be traded. My point is, as a player, you don't really have any leverage, and one of the things you can do is ask for a trade. It doesn't mean, by the way, that you're going to be traded. It just can help facilitate things and expedite things and show how angry you really are and how serious you are about getting a new contract. Oftentimes, I would be willing to bet almost every time that anybody has ever gone this far, which is to continue to hold out without practicing a week into training camp, they also demand a trade. To me, it would probably be not very common to do all of this and to never demand a trade. Like, if you're unhappy enough to not show up in an era where it costs you huge money, or to not practice in an era where most of the time guys just practice, you're willing to do that. You're also willing to demand a trade. It's like driving to the beach, but not taking out your folding chair and sitting there and watching the waves for a little while. But, you know, everyone says, oh, the holdout is over. Well, as a technicality, sure, because he's holding in. What is a holdout? A holdout means he's unwilling to play. He is unwilling to practice. He is still doing that. And we all have to play this game as if he's injured, you know, and I've, number one priority of my entire career is, like, never question toughness, never say that a guy that's hurt isn't really hurt. But, like, we all really know.
Yeah, his ankle's fine is what I'll say that.
He's not hurt. I mean, this is not an injury, but it's this. It is infuriating to hear Dan Quinn sit there and act like he's Sam Cosmi. I mean, at his press conference the last few days, he's like, we're getting Terry treatment. He's coming along
well. It's a process. It's day to day and every day.
He's in the training room. We're working with him. And it's like, oh, my God, don't lie to my face, bro. Like, just, you know, just smirk. Say, yeah, he'll be in the training room. And we're not stupid. Don't act like we're stupid. Terry isn't even gone. It's not like he's walking out there with a fake limp or whenever the ankles come up in a couple of these little walk and talks, he's completely hasn't answered it or suggested he's actually hurt. But this is his leverage. And what's scary, I think, if you're a fan is, before he showed up, my point was $50K a day is eventually going to mean something. $811,000 to miss a preseason game. He's got to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he has shown up, and you're doing this I'm injured thing. Well, if you're injured until you get paid, why ever stop being injured? He's there. He can't be fined. He's going to accrue a season. Like, there is no drawback, if he's serious about it, that would say eventually he's got to play, other than pride or his teammates kind of coming up to him and being like,
"Come on,
bro, you're killing us." But this, to me, him being there, doing the I'm hurt thing, like, if he was there and there was no ankle, there was no injury, I would say, okay, well, there's only a matter of time before you got to practice because you could still be fined or whatever. That's how you get out of the money. So why couldn't he do this in 2 weeks? Why couldn't he do this in a month?
Yeah, if we're still playing pretend in a few weeks and he's skipping preseason games because of it, my hand's going up here. That tide turns. Now we're pretending. You're under contract.
By the way,
let's go.
That's not like a month away. They play a preseason game in a week and a half.
Yeah.
Like, so, I think it's like 9 or 10 days.
And I don't remember a case where that's where this has happened. What you're talking about, but it is. It's a legal recourse given the CBA. Like, it's one of these loopholes. They didn't think of this permutation. Maybe the next one they will, where someone could just pretend to be hurt for the extent of their contract and then, you know, call everyone's bluff. Right. I guess to me, my opinion will lower significantly if that's something that he does. I'm not accusing him of doing it before he does it. So that's the end of that. But again, I think fan tide would turn at some point if we're still pretending to be hurt at, you know, a month from now or missing the regular season or as it might go. But I wonder what the team's recourse would be eventually. Like, let's say he's still out with an ankle into September and game one of the regular season, game two of the regular season. Are we now calling in like independent arbiter third-party physicians to be like, yep, clean bill of health on the ankle. It's totally fine. You could absolutely be playing football. And then we go to court on something. I mean, like, what sort of where would that end,
this
game of pretend?
I don't think that any of that would happen. Here's how I think this is going to go. As long as they're doing the part that he's not that desperate to do, you can play this game out and say, I got an ankle. There's a date, I don't know it, he would know it, his agent Buddy Baker would know it, where he probably feels like, and if I'm Buddy his agent, I'm going, when do you need to start working so that you are able to have the best season possible with Jaden Daniels in this offense and so that you can get the contract you're looking for on the other side of this season? And however long he needs for that ramp up, he doesn't need to play in the preseason probably in his mind. That's when your ankle heals, you're able to get back on the practice field. I think the holdout is all the stuff you guys want me to do that's better for you, better for the team, even if it benefits me a little bit too. If you guys are benefiting, not going to do it. But the way I think it goes is he shows up with a week or two before the season. Maybe it's going into that final preseason game. I would even guess it's closer to the start of the season without a deal. And he just decides, okay, the game of chicken is over. I've made my point, and now I'm going to get to work and go have a banner year. Because that's the only leverage, really, when the season starts that he has, is to elevate what he's going to be worth. Position yourself to play great. I think he will do that. He's going to play in every single game. He'll be ready in week one. He'll start in week one. But at that point, the chance of getting a long-term deal done is over. Like, they have now squandered any chance of that, and he's playing his final season here sans a franchise tag, which they could tag him 1 year at $30 million if they wanted to do that. Very possible. I don't think they would tag him for 2 years because it's close to $35 million, which they don't want to pay him now. I don't know why they'd want to pay it to him a couple of years from now. But my guess is that would be their plan. Now you're inviting this whole thing to happen again next offseason if you tag him. No mini camp, no training camp, him signing the autographs and his agent and him hanging out on the field at every practice next year. Is the juice worth the squeeze? I would say no. I'm probably not tagging him and dealing with that. But that's the ultimate alternative for them. I don't know what you think. I just think this thing goes till, you know, a couple of weeks from now when he feels like, all right, it's time to ramp it up. The ankle suddenly feels better. And then he gets ready for week one.
That's my guess, too. And you know, the inner workings are during the day. Or like day to day, it gets ugly and it's annoying and it seems like we're, you know, this is all chaos and the world's ending and every bit of it is doomsday. But then so many of these signings have happened on the eve of the regular season with a week to go or, you know, in the middle of August or whatever. You go around the league and marquee players have signed at this point or beyond and even weeks from now. This is a marquee player. It's going to happen at some point. Again, because I don't think players really have that much recourse given the way that all this stuff is written. If they'd like to change that, they should. But given the way it's written right now, you would say he's pretty stuck. Like, you got to play football to get what you want. And you're under contract to play football this year whenever you're ready to do that. You know, and that's kind of where I see the team, you know, they're walking along to that destination. They're going, do you want to come with us?
Yeah.
Down here where the nitty gritty.
It's so complicated and nuanced. But I think if this was a wedding and you had to sit on one side of the aisle, you walk in and you're either with the groom or the bride.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be sitting on the team side, I know, just based on how you talk about this on air.
Yeah.
I would be sitting on McLaurin's side. I think he's earned a payday. Now, we don't know exactly what the money he's asking for is, but we can get into that because Adam Schefter had some insight on that. We'll play that clip for you. As soon as we return, you guys will want to hear what Schefter's suggesting could be on the other side of the rainbow for McLaurin if he gets his way. But let's open up the phones at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Do you feel like this is better with him being a hold-in instead of a hold-out? And how do you feel about how he's handling this so far? Showing up the last couple of days and kind of being around, but not being on the practice field. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Just taking it day by day.
Being here in the building, though, how does that improve the dialogue?
Just taking it day by day. Are you going to be able to practice at some point, or how far away from being healthy are you? Just taking it day by day.
That is Terry McLaurin, who is taking it day by day.
Like, if you were to summarize with one phrase as to what he's doing and his plan, it would be?
I think he's taking it day by day.
Day by day.
There's a winning off the field ability there where you can just ask someone any question, and you can just do a segment. And they're taking it day by day.
Other people taking multiple days at a time, not Terry.
He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. So the question we've got for you guys is the hold-in better than the hold-out? I'm not so sure about that. It's certainly better than Terry McLaurin. Because by showing up, he doesn't lose any more money. And that is why he showed up. It's not because they got closer to a contract, I don't think. It's not because he had to be there so that he could sign autographs and hang out with his buddies, although those are nice things too. $50,000 a day adds up very fast, and it's $811,000 as of next week when those preseason games start. So that's why he's there. He's got this mystery phantom injury thing now that is the ultimate out of anything he doesn't want to do. And in this case, that's practice or basically just continue to tell the team, let me know when I'm getting paid and that's when I'll start working. But I don't think this is better. It's certainly not better for the team. And I don't think it's better for the overall negotiation necessarily because there could be some animus. Do you think Adam Peters and the people in the front office and the people over in Ashburn are excited that he and his agent are standing in the end zone every single day after practice or that he's out there kind of working the charm with the people after every single practice? I don't think they like that very much. I think they would much rather it be that he's not there. Now, again, they've made their bed. They've got to sleep in it.
Sure.
They chose to be here. They could have paid him. They didn't. When you don't offer him market value, when you haven't paid him what the market dictates he's worth, this is what you got to deal with. But I think there's this assessment or this assumption, Danny, that if they're just closer together in proximity geographically, if they're in the same building, eventually they'll figure this out because he's going to have fun with his teammates and just want to be one of the guys. It could also work the other way, where they start to get more and more annoyed by how he's conducting himself or operating, whereas if he wasn't at the facility at all, it's like out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, neither are good. So we'll start there. Like not, this is not like, nice, he's there, win. That's not the case. I think you've laid that out very well. I think it is slightly better on a binary. Again, neither are good. It's like 0 to 0.1. So I think it's a little bit better because you just mentioned it. He's around his teammates. He's going to meetings. The only thing he's not doing is physical stuff. Now, the big dog and pony show of talking to his agent, having a heart-to-heart with hands on hips, doing Danny Tanner TV dad-style stuff at the end of every practice, and then doing the pandering to the fans and giving autographs and things, getting them to get all the clips out there of going, Terry, Terry, pay Terry, they're going to pay you. That's public pressure stuff. They probably don't love that. But I would rather have him there because almost all the business of football, except for practicing, is happening. So he's going to the meetings. He's around the guys. I'd rather that kind of pull him into the sphere, reminding him every day you're not doing the stuff, you're not here with us, instead of out of sight of out of mind for him. Because again, neither is good, but this is like, again, slightly better, still bad.
But being able to live all the stuff that isn't practice, like the 90% of it that's the most enjoyable part, I think makes you less inclined to have the urgency to end it. In other words, like, I don't have a great comp, but if you got to tag along with your buddies all day long, and the only thing you didn't have to do is when they went out to cut the grass, you didn't have to go with them, but you get to have lunch with them in the cafeteria, and you get to just sit with them and talk with them, and you get to go to the movies with them, and you do everything else, all the fun stuff. You just, the most arduous, awful part, you don't get to do. And I get that there's fun to practicing for these NFL players as well. But I'm watching them out there. They're sweating. They're tired. I've talked to a couple guys that are just over it already. It's bodies leaning on each other. Uh-huh. You're risking injury and all this stuff. He gets to do everything else. What is his urgency? How many times through the years have players said that they don't enjoy training camp as it is? So if like he was not there at all, yeah, he would be missing the locker room conversations, the cafeteria time, the ping pong games. He gets to do all that stuff now.
Yeah, so. But there's a we're going through this and you're not thing that injured players don't like, and perfectly healthy players who are telling you they have an injury won't like that either.
Meaning he won't like it?
Yeah, like because everybody's going through something. You know, sure. Like if you're the guy just sort of standing there with your arms folded, well, everybody's working to the bone and everybody kind of will glance at you going, hey, man, you know, at a certain point, there's that I'm not part of this thing anymore. I should be out there with my guys that regular injured players have, that longing, and he's not injured. So I think that's that slight gravitational pull. Again, I'm not saying it's good. I'm looking for a silver linings playbook here in two bad options.
The juice to me is not worth the squeeze. We just went through a lot of bad things that based on him being there.
Mm-hmm.
The good of just, you know, maybe that, you know, that he gets to enjoy his teammates and there's some hope that makes him more inclined to sign a contract for less than what he would have if he wasn't there, I guess. Like, that isn't overly realistic to me. Disco's in Laurel. What's up, Disco? How are you?
Hey, guys. First of all, Grant, I was rooting for you in your quarterback challenge, man. You were almost there, man.
Thank you.
You were looking pretty good. You got some potential.
No, I got to say, the first pass, Disco, that I threw, I think this is on one of the socials, 106.7 The Fan. The first pass, I'm not going to blame the football, but if I was going to blame the football, I would say that it was underinflated, and I was a little surprised and it stuck to my hand. But I'm not going to blame the football. The second and third passes are more authentic to, I think, the passer you're getting if you sign me.
Yeah, got to work on your footwork, brother, but then I think you're going to get there. But anyway, you know, I think Terry being there is really big for his teammates, because I think his teammates know what he means to the team. I'm also wondering why his agent is, you know, yucking it up and hamming it up in front of the camera. Is there any precedent for that? I find that to be a little bit odd. When I look at his client list, clearly Terry is his could be his cash cow. But I think he is handling it the right way. I think that's authentically Terry, but I think Terry is a guy that wants to be on the field. And I will say this last thing. It's related, but a little unrelated. I think I've been hearing a lot of, with Terry, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs don't have a number one wide receiver. They go to Super Bowls. Well, look at Lamar Jackson and look at this team. They don't have this. I don't even want that to seep anywhere into my mentality. Why would you do that to your young quarterback? You don't have to do it the way that the Chiefs do it. You don't have to do it the Ravens the way that the Ravens. You have a Terry McLaurin, and you have a potentially transcendent quarterback. Please let's not have that mindset where we can, okay, we're just going to decide that, oh, maybe we really don't need him. No, we do. Pay him.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
It's part of my frustration, I guess, is you've got the money, and I am still in the mode of the more things you can do to surround Jaden Daniels with immense talent over the next few years, the better. The more decisions you can make that are pro-Daniels, Daniels-friendly, if you will, that's how you should be operating. There's an added value to me in paying a receiver, overpaying a little bit if need be, to help Jaden Daniels, who's a fringe number one wide receiver. There's an added value overpaying a little bit to a guy that has done what McLaurin has done here, which I guess is why if I've got to sit somewhere at the wedding, I'd be sitting on the McLaurin side. Although, as I have said, there is plenty of nuance to it. I do want to comment really quickly on the agent thing. Agents are on the field after practice semi-regularly. There's friends and family sections. Players will have their agents stop through town on a camp tour or whatever. Or in the case of Baker, as you said, there's nothing bigger in his life right now as an agent, his business, than getting this deal done with Terry McLaurin. So I'd imagine he's going to be here for an extended period of time. But after practice today, wives, girlfriends, families, they're all out on the field. And you will see a handful of NFL agents at that time out there. It just so happens we're all taking pictures. We're all gathered around because it's the story.
Yeah.
We're just not doing it with every single agent out there. Chris in Hyattsville, what's going on?
What's up, Grant? I just tweeted your videos to Orlovsky to get a full breakdown, so I hope that comes through.
Oh, nice. That would be good.
By the way, I'm also day-to-day, but aren't we all? I would say that, listen, from a team standpoint, I want Terry on the field because the team is better and they will win games. But it's very difficult for me to have any sympathy for these multi-million dollar athletes trying to essentially stroke their own egos by comparing each other's salaries. And I think the NFL and other sports bring it upon themselves because they've turned contract talks and contract signings into a year-round content marketing scheme. You know, it keeps the NFL relevant by constantly publishing this. But then what happens is it turns into an arms race where players are continuously trying to up their peers and be quote unquote respected by getting one more dollar than whoever it was recently paid. And Terry McLaurin has already been paid $56 million in his career. I don't think he's been disrespected by this organization at all. So it's very difficult for me to sympathize with him from that standpoint.
Appreciate you, dude. So yeah, the rhetoric that's used, I'm with you, Chris. It always rubs in the wrong way. And this isn't just you're starting with billionaires over millionaires. No, that's in a labor dispute. That's when CBA stuff happens, where I'm not on the side of the owners. This is different. This is the jersey. This is the franchise. This is the group that we're building. So again, I think Terry McLaurin deserves a raise, and he should get one. He should fight for one. He should use every mechanism at his disposal to try to get more money. We all should, know your worth and try to sell yourself on it. But kind of given the climate, and given the CBA, I've kind of all along returned to this one spot where I go, the team's going to win, quote unquote, right? Like the team's going to get the better of the player almost 99.9% of the time.
But you make the choice every day. Do I want to be like the Bengals or do I not? Does everything have to be a pain in the ass or not? And they're kind of doing it the Bengals way right now.
On this one.
Yes. This is the only one so far like this.
I would say they're the 49ers way. They're usually pretty good.
Kind of. We'll see. I mean, we'll see if he gets paid or not.
If he doesn't, then it is Bengalsy.
But you could, I guess, say 49ers-y potentially if you believe that a contract is coming. I don't think the 49ers were as far apart as the reports are that these two sides are on any of those negotiations, though. Like, if you remember the Nick Bosa, the Trent Williams, it was never, there wasn't this kind of acrimony. They weren't cutting promos at the car dealerships in what's outside of San Francisco.
I don't know.
Wine country?
Yeah, they were in Catalina.
But
yeah,
we'll see if they get a deal done. 800-636-1067 is the number. Danny, there is a position group that has been way better at practice than I thought it was going to look. I'm going to tell you what it is next. Plus, we do want to get into Santana Moss joining the Ring of Fame. We'll do it at the top of the hour. Rookie tackle Josh Connerly at 3:30. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan, pretty fascinating wide receiver news just broke moments ago, and it's McLaurin-related, I would say, tangentially. The Broncos and Courtland Sutton reached agreement on an extension. Courtland Sutton is the exact same age as Terry McLaurin. He gets 4 years and $92 million, which is $23 million per year. So the Commanders are going to go to the agent of Terry McLaurin and say, see, this is the problem. You guys want $33 million a year, very likely, or more. This player, your age at your position, coming off of a 1,000-yard year, very similar to Terry, 80 catches for 1,080 and 8 touchdowns, just signed for $23 million a year. Now, the agent for McLaurin can come back and go, this is not a good comp. 2 1,000-yard seasons ever. In fact, 2 850-yard seasons ever. Injuries multiple times over where he's missed a bunch of games. McLaurin is way more productive and way more durable. So I'm not suggesting McLaurin should not do better than Courtland Sutton. That is not my point. But I will 100% say, Danny, that Courtland Sutton getting $23 million a year makes life harder on McLaurin the same age to get $10 million more per year than that.
It certainly does. You know, everybody can do a we said, they said kind of thing. Well, it's more, more touchdowns over the last 2 years than McLaurin has had, even with his outburst of 13. Yeah, but not as many years of consistent play. Well, that's extra years isn't to your benefit. You're older. Like, you could go around all day. That's why I think this is such a hard, complicated thing. If McLaurin was 27, I do think this would be done already. But he's not. It's not his fault. He's not 27. You know, it's time and the track record of 30-plus-year-old receivers crashing back down to earth is pretty extensive. There are guys that have performed up to the levels of their deals. I mean, Henry Ellard was great here so many years ago. I'd say Devontae Adams, even though he's lost a step or two, is still very productive. But Diggs and Thielen and you can go down the list of guys that were around Terry's age and profile, prolific, catching a bunch of balls, who just were never the same after signing a mega deal right around this age. So I understand the team's perspective on that. But yeah, I don't think this data point helps McLaurin and his agent get more money out of the team today.
No, and it's one of those things where they may downplay how similar they are, but I'll bet you if Courtland Sutton got 31 today, they would have cared. You know what I mean?
Right. That's a great way to put it.
He's the same age as Terry. He just got 31, and Terry's more productive and better and has been more durable. This is one of those where it didn't go well, so you're going to dismiss it. Again, hear me. There are two points here. Mm-hmm. One, McLaurin, more productive, more durable, should get more than Courtland Sutton. But also, same age. That's what the team is arguing. Look at the guys that sign around your age, like Mike Evans. They don't get anywhere near $34, $35 million a year. Do you have the Schefter clip, Darius? This was Adam Schefter on McAfee today on ESPN suggesting that McLaurin wants well over what DK got, which was 32.5. Now, I've never heard well over, and the conversations I've had with people that have some inside information on what's going on here, they've made it sound like the DK price tag is kind of where the negotiation is going to be for Terry, but he's talking about considerably more. Well, what is that, $34 million a year, $35 million a year? What are we talking about?
DK Metcalf was the same draft class as Terry McLaurin. He got about $33 million a year. You know, I wouldn't think that Terry is willing to take less than that, and I think he wants considerably more than that. Now, what it comes in at, we'll wind up seeing. Washington, you know, they're not there right now, and they love and value Terry McLaurin, but they love and value him at a different price.
Adam Schefter on ESPN today. I did tease it. I wanted to tell you which position groups looked a lot better, and I thought you'd be excited about this. The cornerback room has balled out these last few days. And I actually think the secondary in general has exceeded my expectations.
Hmm.
Now, today was the first day of pads, and even if there had been a bunch of days of pads, what does that really mean? They're not playing games. I remember when people got fooled by Emmanuel Forbes in training camp early on. But I like how Trey Amos looks. We'll be on the show tomorrow. Marshawn Lattimore looks, I think he's moving way better than he was last season. Whether or not he's Marshawn Lattimore again, not sure yet. But they've got depth. A guy like Noah Igbinoghene was like a number two corner at points last year.
Yeah.
He's basically fifth on the depth chart right now. They've added a lot there. Jonathan Jones has looked okay to me. I just think if you ask me one position group that has impressed the most, I would say corner. And generally, the secondary with Will Harris at safety, he allows them to play a little more man, does some things on the back end that I've liked with his speed. That's an area where I have taken note and been very pleased so far.
You'd rather hear that than not for a group that was in question. So again, no parades are scheduled just yet. There right. are no gold jackets, no Ring of Fame announcements. But again, that's a good data point. Let me ask you this. Hard to quantify this. There's no Terry McLaurin on the field.
That's the other part.
It's a lot of Michael Gallup and Chris Moore and guys I don't really know. Does that have anything to do with it?
How could it not?
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it's Deebo Samuel.
Right.
Right. But for the most part, Washington is deeper at receiver than it's been, but it's a lot of like depth guys, right? It's threes, fours, you know, NFL caliber backup down the depth chart guys like Michael Gallup. They don't have dudes that are going to win one-on-one and route you up. I think that's probably a factor. But I don't just mean man coverage where they've shined. I just mean in general, there just aren't that many guys open zone. Like they've played a really tight, decent defense on the back end, I think. We will get into Santana Moss joining the Ring of Fame, but we want to hear from you next, specific to this Courtland Sutton development, this breaking news. Same age as Terry McLaurin, multi-time 1,000-yard receiver, had a very McLaurin-esque year one season ago this past year, and he just got $23 million a year, which is actually a step back, basically, from what McLaurin even made last year, and is nowhere near what he's asking for. How could that change or complicate things? We're Grant and Danny on The Fan.